Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
It's going to be a global media event. President Trump meeting President Putin in Helsinki. The world's news media will be covering every moment of this meeting. But what will it really mean? And how should the press frame this pivotal moment? Let's get the story behind the story. This is the Reliable Sources podcast. I'm Brian Stelter. And this weekly podcast, in between our Sunday television broadcasts, is a chance to go in depth with media leaders and newsmakers. This week, I'm thrilled to be joined by a newsmaker, Michael Isikoff. He's the chief investigative correspondent at Yahoo News, the co-author of the New York Times bestseller Russian Roulette, and the co-host of the Skullduggery podcast. Michael, thanks for coming over.
Hey, great to be with you.
It's been a few months since you and David Korn released Russian Roulette. It really was at the top of the charts for a while because I think people were hungry to try to know, to find out what we already do know about Trump and his ties to Russia. Do you feel that sometimes there's a disconnect between what the evidence shows and what the public knows or wants to know about some of the confusing connections Trump has in his past to Russia?
Well, it is a confusing story, and it's unfolded in bits and pieces. It's hard, frankly, for the viewers, for listeners, for the public, and for reporters to keep the whole story straight. And that was one of the reasons we wrote the book, to sort of put it in a narrative form, understandable, to explain the significance of each and every development that has been picked over by everybody in the press for, you know, close to 2 years now. At least it's been 2 years since I started digging into the issue of the Trump campaign's connections to Russia. And I think the reason the book has done as well as it has is because, the feedback we get is it helps people understand why certain things matter, how events unfolded, and gives a context to what is a confusing story.
So by now, it's pretty well established, this massive Russian effort to interfere in the election in 2016. Is it also well established that there was a Russian government attempt or effort to cultivate Trump? Because that's partly what makes this Putin meeting so interesting.
Right. And yes, I think that it's pretty clear there was, coinciding with the Russian attack on our election, and it was an attack. It wasn't a, the word meddling sometimes gets used.
I
don't think it quite does justice to the enormity of what was going on, in which you had cyber attacks, the theft of internal emails from both the DNC and the Clinton campaign through the John Podesta emails, the dumping of those emails through intermediaries and cutouts to WikiLeaks, a form of information warfare, the probes on state election voter databases, which was something truly extraordinary and alarming to a lot of federal officials at the time, and then the social media component, the Russian troll farm with its phony Facebook accounts and Twitter bots. But simultaneous with all of that, which, as the intelligence community confirmed, was designed to denigrate, to sow discord, but also to denigrate Hillary Clinton and pump up Donald Trump, was this very concerted effort through multiple characters to cultivate people in Trump world,
yeah.
Both Trump himself, his family, and figures in the Trump campaign, to set up meetings, to set up a summit between Trump and Putin during the campaign, and along with many other efforts to get close to various figures in Trump world.
Oftentimes the word collusion comes up in this context. Maybe that's the wrong C word, though. After all, the special counsel's charge is not to find collusion. It's to investigate interference in the election by Russians and whether anyone on Trump's team knew about it. Collusion isn't even mentioned in the document. Maybe cultivation is a better C word?
Well, cultivation,
a more important word?
Cultivation is certainly apt, and I think that's been pretty well established. Look at the emails about the efforts of a guy who we talk about in the book named Alexander Torshin, a deputy governor of the Russian Central Bank, a close ally of Putin, an accused money launderer. This is a guy who was being investigated by the Spanish National Police for money laundering, and actually there was an effort a number of years ago to arrest him when he was due to fly into Spain to meet with an organized crime figure who was under investigation. So this guy, Torshin, had spent several years cultivating various conservative organizations. He became a lifetime member of the NRA and would show up at its annual meetings. He would show up at national prayer breakfasts in Washington. And then during the campaign, he and his sidekick, a woman by the name of Maria Butina, were trying to set up meetings with Trump and the Trump campaign. And there are emails about efforts by Torshin to set up a Trump Putin summit, to have Trump come to Moscow for a conference on the worldwide persecution of Christians. All this was being done through lots of various conservative activists who Torshin and Butina had reached out to. And it was a clear attempt to get their get inside the Trump campaign and cultivate people in Trump world. It led in one instance at the NRA convention in Louisville to a meeting between Torshin, the accused money launderer, and Donald Trump Jr. They had hoped to go further. It didn't. But at least on the Russian side, it looked to many people as a clear example of how the Russians were seeking to cultivate Donald Trump.
And this is the kind of background that I think folks need to know when we are about to hear about a Trump-Putin meeting. You know, there's so much context around this. Do you find that comes through in the news coverage of Trump and Putin?
Well, look, it's kind of hard to talk about Trump and Putin these days without talking about the backdrop of the ongoing Mueller investigation and the fact that this is a president who is under investigation by a special counsel of his own Justice Department for his ties to various Russian actors. So I think when we think, look, there's been many summits between presidents and Russian leaders throughout the Cold War, throughout the post-Cold War period. Some became controversial. Others became quite productive in changing around the direction of U.S.-Russian relations. Reykjavik, when Reagan met with Gorbachev. So there's nothing unusual or in the least bit wrong about a president wanting to talk to the leader of Russia. It is the other leading nuclear power in the world. But it is unprecedented to have a situation where the U.S. president is meeting in a summit with the Russian president while while under investigation for his ties to the Russian president. And I think that has understandably raised a lot of questions and a lot of skepticism, and especially when we learn that the president wants to talk to Putin alone without any other U.S. officials present, it's inevitably going to raise concerns.
Right. I mean, these two men have met before. They met on the sidelines of other bigger events. This one's different because it is the two leaders coming together privately, and there will be these conversations that only they are present for. And I do have to say there's been some, you know, conspiracy theory type behavior on the left that I think mimics some of what's often mocked from the right. You know, there's a danger in going too far down these roads of speculation with what we don't know about Trump and Putin. Frankly, right. What we do know might be worrisome enough.
Yeah, look, I mean, there is a fascinating backdrop to this. I mean, just go back to the Miss Universe pageant in 2013, which, as we write in Russian Roulette, was largely about Trump's efforts to meet with Putin. That was his obsession.
Isn't that when he tweeted, "Will he be my best friend?"
Well, when it's announced in earlier that year that they're going to hold Miss Universe in Moscow, Trump immediately says that he hopes to meet Putin, and he hopes that Putin will become his BFF. And then he continues. And look, the aspect of this story that has caused the most head-scratching among national security officials, counterintelligence people, everybody who's looked at it closely is, how do you explain Trump's repeated warm feelings about Vladimir Putin? Why does he continually praise Putin? Why does he continually give Putin the benefit of every doubt? Why does he always talk about what a great leader Putin is and how preferable he is to various people in the United States and other world leaders around the world? And nobody's ever been able to explain it.
But don't we have to be careful as we ask the questions, not to come across as if we think we know the answers? Is there a risk, you think?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely. And there's no question there's been way too much speculation going on in this story. We can't take it beyond what the facts are. But
it's tricky because it's a mystery at its core.
Right. And it's a mystery that has been fueled by Trump's own behavior and actions. Remember, during the campaign early on, he would talk about the relationship he had with Vladimir Putin, how they got along.
They were on the same 60 Minutes episode.
They were on the same 60 Minutes episode. You know, do I have a relationship with Vladimir Putin? He was asked when he went to Moscow for Miss Universe by Thomas Roberts of NBC. Oh, yes, we have a great relationship.
Right.
You know, we get along well. He was even asked on a number of occasions, had he met with Putin? And he said, yes, I've met him. And one time he says, I met him once. We got along well. It turned out that he had never met with Putin at that point. He finally says that when the Russia story begins to blow up right after the Democratic convention. He's interviewed by George Stephanopoulos, and then he finally fesses up for the first time. No, he actually has never talked to Vladimir Putin. Mm. They've never met. They've never been in the same room together, which directly contradicted everything he'd said before. So, you know, it is Trump's behavior is puzzling. We report in the book about how after that Miss Universe pageant, although Putin couldn't meet with him, he had a meeting that the one night he was there, that Trump was there with the King of Holland, who had gotten stuck in a traffic jam. So Putin explained that he couldn't make it to the Miss Universe pageant. But then Putin afterwards sends Trump a personal note along with a gift, a black lacquered box that's delivered to Trump Tower. what was in the box? What did the note say? Trump has said everything about his communications with various world leaders, and including Putin at times. He's never explained that. So there's a lot here we don't know. We can speculate. We should be careful not to over-speculate and take the evidence beyond what it is. But as you point out aptly, this is a mystery.
And some of pressing for answers involves asking the questions publicly and pointing out when things are fishy and pointing out when things don't seem to add up. And of course, the other key piece of this, thinking about coverage of this meeting and how all the TV anchors are going to be in Helsinki and how it's going to be this grand event, is that the Mueller probe very quietly continues to roll on. You mentioned that earlier. I've seen you say in other interviews recently that there's an expectation of some action this summer, if only because the midterms are coming up and he may not want to appear to be what's the right word?
I don't want to say meddling, but influencing
the election.
Yeah.
So what do we know, if anything, about what's going on, the status of the probe?
Well, we know a lot less than we'd like to know about what's going on in Mueller's shop. It has been pretty much leak-proof, unlike other investigations over the years, and certainly other independent counsel or special counsel investigations. But, you know, there are a couple things. We know that in just a couple of weeks, Paul Manafort's going to trial, and we should learn a bit more about what Mueller knows about Manafort's ties to various Russian actors and pro-Russian players. You know, useful to remember that Manafort was the chairman of the campaign while these relationships were still ongoing. His top deputy in Kiev was a somebody that the FBI assessed to be a Russian military intelligence asset.
Right.
He had business relationships with a guy named Oleg Deripaska, billionaire oligarch, who was identified as one of the two or three oligarchs closest to Putin in a U.S. State Department cable, and who, interestingly, we write about this in Russian Roulette as well, was denied entry to the United States because of the FBI's concerns about his connections to organized crime. And when Hillary Clinton was the Secretary of State, when she would meet with Sergei Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, one of the items that Lavrov would always bring up was, could she get Deripaska a visa so he could come to the United States? So this is the guy that Manafort was in business with, a suspected mobbed-up oligarch tight with Putin. And as you know, they then had a bit of a falling out. Deripaska thought Manafort had stolen $19 million of his money in a Ukrainian cable deal, and Manafort was trying to mollify him by offering him private briefings on what was going on inside the Trump campaign. So the Manafort trial should bring a lot of this out, and it helps explain how this investigation began in the first place. Legitimate concerns about how the leader of the Trump campaign, the top official, had very strange connections with various players close to the Kremlin. But beyond that, in answer to your question about what more we might be able to expect, we know Mueller has been investigating the obstruction issue for some time, which began after Trump fired James Comey, and then said publicly when he did so he had the Russia thing on his mind.
Yeah.
The obstruction investigation seems like a discreet part of this. The events and the number of players are limited. It's the kind of thing that Mueller probably can be wrapping, should be wrapping up by now. And if he is, one would expect he would do so before Labor Day. After Labor Day, it comes, it's a little bit close to the election. And Mueller certainly doesn't want to be accused of the same thing that James Comey was accused of during the campaign. So I think there's a reasonable chance that we could be hearing more from Mueller this summer.
And that could be in the form of a report, it could be in the form of indictments.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And also, just remember, I mean, Mueller's been at this for over a year now.
Is that a long time in your mind?
It's not overly long for a special counsel investigation. But if you add on the 9 months before that, when the FBI began its counterintelligence investigation, remember, it began in July of 2016. So we are on the 2 year mark. And I think given the high stakes, given the cloud it has placed over the president, I think that Mueller and his people and those at the Justice Department overseeing it, like Rod Rosenstein, probably understand that there is some national interest in moving this along as quickly as possible so we can get answers to all these questions you and I have been talking about for the last 2 years.
Yeah, it just seems like Mueller and the ongoing probe is the mood music of this Helsinki meeting.
That's a good analogy.
Even though it'll never come up, right? But may never be spoken about between the world leaders, but it's incumbent on the journalists covering it to be pointing out this hasn't happened before, to have a president under this kind of investigation. We haven't even touched on some of the other investigations that the president may be somehow connected with. Michael Cohen and what's going on with him. Let's take a quick break. More with Michael Isikoff in just a moment. Back now on the Reliable Sources podcast. I'm here with Michael Isikoff. He's the chief investigative correspondent at Yahoo News and the co-author of Russian Roulette. I'm just curious, Michael, how it works when you have a co-author, your colleague David Korn. You and him wrote the book together. You know, he takes some pretty strong positions sometimes. I saw him the other day saying that much of the nation's become nonplussed about Moscow's attack on America and numb toward Trump's treachery. Korn, of course, writes for Mother Jones. This has more of a point of view than Yahoo. Do you ever find yourself disagreeing with him or taking a different stance? I'm curious how it works when you have a co-author.
I think it's both a challenge and a benefit to have a co-author. We had written a book before. We did a book back in 2006, Hubris, which was about the run-up to the Iraq War that did very well. And, you know, when we first got together, I was at Newsweek then. He was at The Nation then. And that raised a few eyebrows because he obviously is much more of a advocacy journalist, but a journalist, and I'm not. Look, whenever you're working with somebody else on a big project, there's inevitably going to be challenges about getting on the same page, so to speak, on various matters. And, you know, fair to say we have we each have strong views and have no compunction about expressing them. But at the end of the day, I think the book worked because we made this a book of a narrative nonfiction, but ultimately reportage. Yeah. It's reporting. We stuck to the facts. We explained the sourcing. It is not a polemic. In fact, a lot of people who've read the book were surprised at how tough we were on Hillary Clinton and on the Obama White House and Obama himself, which was not something one would expect from if they were looking for a polemic or a political argument or some reflection of what they hear on MSNBC every night. So I think that the book worked because it was hard, investigative digging and reporting without trying to carry water for any players.
I think the idea of collaborating between someone who has more of an advocacy journalism bent and someone who sees, you know, the work as just, you know, straightforward reporting without advocacy. It's interesting to think about that as a combination. What does it bring? How does it help each of you?
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, it you know, ultimately we were able to get onto the same page on everything. You know, we each have different styles of writing and reporting that I think at the end of the day complemented each other.
Yeah, but, I mean, I find myself feeling I want both kinds of journalism out there. I want many different kinds.
Yeah.
I want lots of people who have a point of view, who are columnist types, and then I want lots of people who aren't.
Yeah. Well, you can get it all in
Russian
roulette.
Right, there needs to be room for all of it. Yeah. What happens now as you, you know, you're a few months past the book, but this idea of Russian roulette, this idea of your subtitle, Putin's War on America, it seems to be continuing. There's evidence of ongoing Russian campaigns through social media to sow discord. Are you still following that? And what stands out to you about that as we get into the midterms?
And of course, look, I mean, that's one big question mark that hangs over the mid-year elections, the midterms. To what extent will the Russians try to do the same thing? To what extent will others take a page from the Russian playbook? Victoria Nuland, who was Assistant Secretary of State during the during the Obama years, had previously served in the Bush White House as well, warned that, you know, the Chinese and other nation states and other adversaries can see what the Russians did, how successful they were, and try to exploit some of the same vulnerabilities. Now, I tend to think that at least the Russians are pretty pretty good at what they do, and they were able to be so successful because we weren't watching, particularly on the social media front. It is astonishing, and I think this is something that is very clear in the book. It was astonishing how oblivious the folks in the U.S. intelligence community and the White House were about what was going on in the social media exploitation of Facebook, Twitter, and other social media forums. And
I think I would add the press to that list too.
You add the press. Add the companies themselves.
You know, I started to see it that October, but didn't really see it. And I don't think anyone really knew how severe this was until after election day.
Yeah, interesting. We had on our podcast, Skullduggery, which I do with my colleague, Yahoo colleague, Dan Kleidman, we had Ben Rhodes on a couple weeks ago. He has his own new book out. And Ben Rhodes was the communications chief for the Obama National Security Council. And he knew what the Russians had done in Ukraine after the intervention in Ukraine. He knew how they were manipulating, how fake news and phony stories were being churned out by various Russian actors. Yet he was cut out of the deliberations in the Obama White House by the NSC in the summer of 2016 about how to respond to the Russian attack. He's a guy who could have called attention or at least told them that they needed to be watching what the Russians were doing. But for some reason, and this is also true with the State Department, it was all viewed through the context of a Ukrainian as a Ukrainian issue, as something overseas. There's some analogies to, I'm sure you've read and seen perhaps, the looming tower about how U.S. intelligence missed what Al-Qaeda was up to. The CIA believed, Al-Qaeda was up to something, but it was going to be overseas. Mm-hmm. This is in the run-up to 9/11, mm-hmm. when in fact they were planning an attack inside the United States. And I think that there are some parallels there.
And of course, something like this through social media, so in discord, it's only as effective as all of us let it be. Very different from an act of traditional terrorism. To the extent that people are fooled by fake news or want to believe the worst about their opponents.
Right.
You know, that's the other thing we have to watch for going forward. If people can be more aware of the potential of being attacked by a foreign power.
The social media companies are taking steps now. It's a little late to do anything about what happened 2 years ago. But, Twitter is kicking various Twitter handles off their platform because they have concluded they're phony and not real or being or that there are bots. Facebook is clearly making efforts to identify where various postings on Facebook and ads are coming from. But, you know, my feeling is I was starting to make the point before, the Russians are pretty good at knowing our vulnerabilities. So I kind of think that they'll do something again, but it won't be the same. They'll figure out some other gap in our collective defenses that they will exploit.
But does some of this risk giving too much credit, you know, exaggerating the power of someone like Putin? There's been an argument lately in some corners of the press that we shouldn't build up Putin to be more than he really is.
Yeah. Look, he is not omnipotent. He's not all powerful. You know, even inside Russia, he's got various constituencies to deal with. Many are not sympathetic to him. But he is he's proven himself as being a survivor of being able to shut down his opponents and sometimes take quite extreme measures in the course of doing so. So in that sense, I think he can be fairly described as ruthless. No, he's not. He's not Joseph Stalin, but he's a new form of adversary that we haven't quite figured out how we're going to deal with.
And what will you be watching as Trump and Putin meet? What will you be watching for? And what do you think we need to make sure we emphasize in the coverage?
Well, I'd like to see some. You remember a number of years ago when Obama met with Medvedev, who was then the Russian president, and leans over to him and says, "You know, I'll have more flexibility after the election."
Yes, it was caught on the microphone.
I'd like to. And then Medvedev, by the way, I just re-listened to it. Says to him, "I will transmit this to Vladimir because." Putin was going to be coming back as president just a few weeks later.
Well, thank you for the hot mic.
That was, compliments of an open mic. I'd like to have an open mic during that private meeting between Trump and Putin.
Right. We can only dream. I like the dream. Michael Isikoff, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Michael Isikoff, the chief investigative correspondent for Yahoo. Check out his podcast. It's called Skullduggery if you haven't already subscribed. And thanks for joining us here on Reliable Sources. We'll see you on television this Sunday and every Sunday, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on CNN. Thanks for tuning in.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.